live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, only about health and healing and nutrition and environmental issues. Some in-depth classroom on-the-air discussions, including a particular type of molecule that is important because of all that it does in our body. And we find it in certain types of seaweed. It has anti-aging potential. And that's one of the reasons we believe that the Japanese have benefited more than probably any other culture in the world from the longest life expectancy in the world. From Tisha Johnson, registered nutritionist. Then, how do we lower our cholesterol safely? We'll hear from Robert Haas on that. Then the latest on, are antidepressants a scam? Five myths about how to treat depression from Bruce Levine from Alternet. From our environmental section today, another way to kill U.S. farmers from Food Freedom News and Randy Ananda. What Monsanto and the FDA are doing to destroy all the little farmers, the small organic farmers in the United States. Oh, yeah, they're doing it, and that's unfortunate. Now, on tomorrow's program, got a really two phenomenally interesting articles. One is, who's ready for a solar superstorm? Not us, emergency officials warn. And that's from Florida Today. That's mainstream reporting from this past week. Did you know that a group of engineers and scientists met last week, hundreds of them, to discuss what to do? And they're clueless. Also tomorrow, Fukushima is falling apart. Are you ready for what's going to happen? You should know this. From Christina Consolo, everyone else is clueless. We'll keep you in the loop. Also, the world's largest open-air gulag, a commentary from Ralph Nader. Also, we'll be having a discussion about the 53% of all young college graduates in America are either unemployed or underemployed. Whoa, what does that tell you if you're not a college graduate? Even higher, much higher. What can we do to help these individuals? We'll discuss that. Now, that's tomorrow's program. I just want to give you a coming attraction. Once a week, we select a topic to go in great depth on it. I generally invite some of the world's greatest minds on that topic to share their insight. All I do is introduce the theme and then sit back and listen. We might have one, two, or three people, and it can go anywhere from 1 hour to, in the case of a special in-depth investigative report on Dr. Andrew Wakefield, 7.5 hours. Tomorrow on Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock will be one of those. In-depth on legalization of drugs, specifically marijuana. You won't want to miss that. Let's begin. If you live inside of a city, like New York City, for example, you don't see the pollution very often. When you're in Los Angeles, you do, because it kind of hangs as gray cloud. And especially when you're flying in, you really see it. But what does it do? Most people assume it doesn't do a whole lot, otherwise they would warn us, or they would tell us not a sustainable place to live. But they can't do that. You just have to be very understanding of what it is to be a person within the Department of Health. What are they going to say? That this city is not really healthy? That you should live in other places that are, that don't have heavy pollution, or are not basins for collecting smog? No, they're not going to say that. First, it would adversely affect the real estate market. It would adversely affect the payrolls of people. People want more money for being in what effect is a environmental combat zone. Everybody would be adversely affected, so they simply deny it. But here is the latest, and this is from the Journal of Internal Medicine. Quote, heart study suggests city center pollution doubles the risk of calcium buildup in the arteries. Well, that's bad. Quote, and this can lead to heart disease, more so, twice as likely as people who live in less polluted urban and rural areas. And so just understand that when you're living in a polluted city, you are increasing your risk of heart disease because of the buildup of pollutants, and the pollutants directly impact calcium in the arteries. So that's the latest on that. Not good. Now, what can we do? There are some things we can do. First, inside your apartment or house or office space, put lots of plants, because plants absorb the pollution and give off oxygen, and that's a good exchange. Secondly, you can put a high-quality air filter in your home or in your office. And thirdly, I know a lot of people right now are driving cabs. We have a very high percentage of the cab drivers listening to this program, and that's good because they share this information. Well, there's two things they can do. First, anytime you get into your cab or car or truck, spray some air therapy into the vent system. When you turn your engine off at night, spray air therapy into your vent system. And air therapy, there are several companies that make it, but it generally just the essential oils out of the rind of lemon, lime, grapefruit. These are highly antibacterial. So if you don't do that, the humidity builds up, and with that comes molds and bacteria. So the moment you turn on either the heat or the air, it just floods the small compartment with all these microorganisms, and you're breathing them in, and they're attacking your immune system. If, however, you spray hydrogen peroxide, easy enough to do, isopropyl alcohol, or citrus into your vents and in the air. When you leave it, you get into the vehicle, you don't have that pollution. Then you can get a portable filtration device that you plug into your cigarette holder, and that then traps the particulate matter, especially in heavy traffic, and that lessens any effect of pollution upon you. And then lastly, you could wear a little ionizer around your neck, and that really creates a barrier of about 12 to 14 inches. It attaches to the heavy particulate matter and drops it harmlessly to the floor, so you're not breathing it in. So those are some things you can do that are positive to counteract the negative. Now, in that same vein, finally, we are now looking at autism in a different light. We, meaning the American public, not the medical community, certainly not the CDC or the FDA or the National Institutes of Health. They can't acknowledge environmental causes. They have to keep living with this lie that it's genes, but it's not genes, and we all know that. But it is environmental. The question is, what in the environment? Well, most of the research that I've uncovered shows that it's the combination of ingredients in multiple vaccines. Because the one thing I find in my travels is that ask a parent, and no one knows as much about the development of a child as a parent, especially the primary caregiver. Let's say it's the mother, because the mother is there all day looking at everything, seeing every single thing, and a mother's like a permanent radar. Everything that baby does comes into that cycle of knowing. When the baby starts to make the regular eye contact, and when starts to move and then have more coordinated muscle action, and when they start to verbalize and form words and associations, acutely aware of this. And historically, medicine acknowledged this, as it acknowledged the significance of breastfeeding. Then we had an epidemic of autism starting in the early 90s, at exactly the time that we started to increase the number of vaccines that a child was supposed to have. Remember, those of us who were baby boomers only had 2 to 3 vaccines, period, our whole life. These kids get dozens and dozens of vaccines. And it's what's in the vaccines. So many of these vaccines have thimerosal or mercury, formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, and all these other ingredients, none of which are good for the body, all of which are dangerous. So that's then, for example, just in one filming I did with over 400 parents, many of those parents were physicians, Can I ask a basic question? When did your child develop autism spectrum disorder? To a person, they said, developing normally till they got the vaccines, and then boom, it happened. So they're able to associate normal development till the vaccines, then abnormal development. Medicine has had to say no to all these parents. You're all wrong. Including those who are physicians, parents whose children have become autistic. Now imagine that. Imagine saying to a million parents, you're all wrong. Because we have decided there is no association. But then you find out that the person who was the number one go-to person is now under indictment for fraud. And then you find out that they held secret meetings to decide how to deal with this problem. That when they looked at their actual study, yes, there was an association between the vaccines. And we can thank Robert Kennedy Jr. and the River Keepers for getting that under Freedom of Information and showing us. The Simpsonwood conference. So we know they lied. We know they lie regularly. We know they engaged in the cover-up, illegal activity. And then we know that the science they're giving us is fraudulent science. But it's still official. And as long as it's official, nothing happens to them. In fact, if you saw 60 Minutes with a person who ran the whole clandestine CIA torture operations, it was very candid. The man said, I ran it by the lawyers, I ran it clear up to the President of the United States and Vice President, everyone else. They all signed off on it. They said that what I was doing was acceptable, legal, and even that I could destroy 92 of the videotapes of torturing people. And it was, he didn't say torture, he said enhanced interrogation, but waterboarding. And waterboarding has been defined as torture. Now, how is it that someone could acknowledge that they engaged in torture, founded the whole program on torture, including things like telling prisoners that they were going to rape their wives and kill their children and waterboard them, and smack them around, quote, not to hurt them. Well, what exactly is your intent when you're smacking someone and they're naked and they're helpless? It's a form of humiliating them. Anyhow, all this he was able to say on 60 Minutes because in our country, if you're in power and you're officially acknowledged as being in power, no matter what crime you commit, you get away with it. Goldman Sachs, all the banks, got away with everything. Crime upon crime. CIA, FBI, crime upon crime. So it doesn't matter what crime you commit, you get away with it. But if you are not in that official area of being protected, then you do something wrong and suddenly it's too bad for you. That's the double standard we live by. And until as a nation we come to accept that we have two standards and we should rebel by general strikes, by boycotts, by not voting for these people and not supporting them on any level, then they continue to use our compliance against us. In any case, that's the case with autism, the vaccine manufacturers. They're official. The people who protect them, the CDC, the FDA, official. The media, like the New York Times, will never report on this story honestly or objectively. Official. So who do you go to? You're just a homemaker. You're a mom. You're a dad. Your kid's sick. You can't get insurance to help the child. Child's going to be sick the rest of their life. It's going to bankrupt you. They don't care. To acknowledge that they're wrong would mean to acknowledge that there is an association between the vaccines, the chemicals in the vaccines, the number of vaccines, and your child's neurological or gastrointestinal development. So they simply deny it. Finally, we are making some inroads. And by the way, if you want to read up on this, Richard Gale, one of our scholars in residence, and we have several, Doug Henderson, Nancy, Jeremy, we've written 18 articles on the fraud and lack of science of efficacy and safety, no matter what you've heard. Read the articles, look at our footnotes, look at our quotes, than compared to anything that you're hearing out there. Well, thank goodness these have gone viral. So tens of millions of people around the world, including physicians and nurses, are reading these, watching the documentaries, Autism Made in USA and Vaccination, and then frequently choosing not to vaccinate themselves or their children. This is from Science Daily. You don't get any more official than that. I'm going to quote this. This is just a couple days ago, 2 days ago. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Health Perspectives. Quote, the top 10 toxic chemicals suspected of causing autism and learning disability. This calls for increased research to identify a possible environmental cause of autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders in American children, and presents a list of 10 target chemicals, including which are considered highly likely to contribute to these conditions. And there's a whole group of individuals who contributed this, from the Children's Environmental Health Center, Mount Sinai School of Medicine, and several other major colleges. I'll just go to the list. And by the way, the National Academy of Sciences, our official, most respected scientific body in the United States, reports that 3% of all neurobehavioral disorders in children, such as autism spectrum disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, are caused by toxic exposures to environmental and other, and another 25% are caused by interactions between environmental factors and genetics. Here are the bad ones, and this is why we should chelate our children, doing it naturally. Lead, methylmercury, PCBs, organophosphate pesticides, organochlorine pesticides, endocrine disruptors, automotive exhaust, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, brominated flame retardants, and perfluorinated compounds. So those are the bad ones. And that's why having the air filters will get rid of most of that, eating organic, not eating genetic engineered foods, juicing, lots of green vegetables in particular would help the body chelate those out or prevent them from getting in. Just showing you what they're now acknowledging. Mind you, a few years ago, they acknowledged none of that. So good news, they're finally, their own official organs are now finally saying it's more than just genetics. For those of you who've been taking your green vegetables, fresh, organic, or in powder, you're on the right trail here. This is from the British Journal of Nutrition. It says, quote, from Science Daily, leafy green vegetables helps prevent damage caused by a workout. That's right. Researchers have found that antioxidant-rich watercress, and I know many of you take watercress because you're taking cruciferous vegetables in combination. Watercress is one of those, a high amount. Can alleviate the natural stress put on your body by a workout. Quote, and they found that participants with no watercress in their system who ate the leafy vegetables just 2 hours before high-level exercise still experienced the same level of protection. So if you're eating watercress, great. If you're not but eating other green vegetables, fine also. And we know that the exercise is good, but also remember, exercise can damage our DNA. Now, this is one of those phenomena that some people get and other people are challenged by. When I saw at a particular time in my career, all the people who were exercising vigorously, and especially when marathon training and racing was a big to-do, there were a group of us that we did six marathons in 7 weeks once. We were just every week we were going to a different marathon somewhere. And we did the first LA Marathon, Los Angeles Marathon, Waterfront, Jersey Shore, Montreal, London Marathon, Philadelphia, the Marine Corps Marathon, New Orleans Marathon. It was fun just traveling around the United States doing the first marathon in those cities. A, you got to enjoy the city, and B, a lot of camaraderie with the people in the races. But I told my buddy Peter Roth, I said, Peter, take a careful look at Greta Weitz. You're working with her. And Peter was the treasurer of the New York Roadrunners Club, and was a good friend. He was a great runner also, but a good friend of all the top athletes, because he trains a lot personally, including a lot of Olympians. And I said, do they understand that the more they work out, the more damage they're doing to their DNA? So yes, they'll be fast. Yes, they'll win races, but they're not compensating. They're not taking in the antioxidants to trap the free radicals. They're not giving their DNA, especially the mitochondria, a chance to re-energize. And there will be a time when there's diminishing returns, and then finally they will be older biologically than someone at the same age chronologically. And one of the guys who was a friend of ours named Dennis would be out there running with us, but Dennis was a fanatic. He would run 13 miles at exactly 6 minutes per mile every single day. And we would frequently run together because he was running at the same time of day. And I said, Dennis, we're racing. Why are you out here? You don't race. He's all, you know, keeping great shape. I said, but do you realize that your leg muscles are going to be prematurely aged because you don't take any supplements? Don't eat them. And I said, but the day's going to come when your legs don't have the DNA. You will have shortened the telomeres. It took him 9 years, and then the day came. Didn't see Dennis for a while. Then one day I'm walking down by Lincoln Center, and there's Dennis. And I went over to say, I said, where you been? He said, well, I should have listened. You're right. I can't even run a 9 minute mile. I can't run 3 miles. My muscles are just like, they don't have it anymore. He said, I should have listened to what you were saying, that you got to compensate. Now, Greta White's died last year. She was arguably one of the world's greatest long distance runners, if not the greatest long distance woman athlete. But she was not healthy. And a lot of these people had this idea that as long as they could win and there was no one faster, they didn't need to compensate for anything. Wrong. Big wrong. Here's how it works. And I've done so many studies on this to confirm this. When you exercise, if you overexercise, you actually destroy your DNA. You speed up the biological aging. You shorten your telomeres. You create a lot of oxidative stress. And that creates free radicals, and that literally alters your DNA. On the other hand, while you're exercising, you also notice concomitantly improved strength and flexibility and speed and endurance. So that gives you the false sense that, gee whiz, you're in great shape. Yes, if you compensate. No, if you don't. Only train to the degree that you want to become fit. That means 3 miles a day of a speed workout and about a half hour of resistance exercises, including your crunches. And that will give you a full body exercise, and that will keep you into shape. You shouldn't be doing more than 3 miles unless you're training for a specific race, and then only for that race, and then you bring it back down again. The body has to compensate by recovery. But even when you're going off 3 miles, you still have to take vitamin C afterwards in large amounts, with vitamin E, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, NADH, L-carnosine, creatine monohydrate, D-ribose. Those are some of the nutrients in PPQ to help compensate. So that traps the free radicals caused by the exercise and oxidative stress. And therefore, you get the benefit of the exercise and you don't get the limitation of hurting your DNA. Now, if you do those two things, then you won't be prematurely aging your musculature. So as you get older, you'll still be able to exercise, and your chronological and biological age will be more normal. Right now, the average person's biological age is almost double their chronological age. Now, that I would not say is true for a lot of younger college students. It's much older. College students today do a lot of drugs. They do a lot of prescription drugs. They do a lot of binge drinking. Their livers are hurt. Their kidneys are hurt. Their brain is, a lot of cells are damaged. So let's say they're 25. They're closer to 50 biologically. And you can only see this later. The trouble is, by the time someone gets later, they paid a heavy price for it. So one more reason that when you exercise, compensate and take your nutrients. And one of the best things in the world you could do every day is make sure you have 7 to 8 servings of green leafy vegetables, because that will help prevent the damage due to exercising. Compounding powder is the best way of doing it. To have 1 tablespoon of a green powder after an exercise protects your muscles that you use during the exercise. Next up, the gut bacteria could hold the key to obesity fighting. This is an interesting study, and I'll quote it. After 8 weeks of high-fat feeding, we found that obesity-prone, germ-free animals gained more weight and had increased fat and 2-hour food intake compared to obese-resistant, germ-free. In lay language, what it means is that the gut, your intestines, if it has the right microbiota or the right probiotics, allowing the right good bacteria, then that good bacteria can help keep you from being obese. So that's just one more thing. That's why you should not be taking sugar or dead meat, because that promotes anything that creates excessive fermentation or putrefaction, and all dead flesh products create that, then that creates bad bacteria. And the bad bacteria make it easier for you to gain weight. And finally, a serving a day of dark chocolate can keep the doctor away. This is from Science Daily. And here's what it says. And this is from Ohio State University as well as University of Texas. It says, quote, chocolate, considered by some to be the food of the gods, has been part of the human diet for at least 4,000 years. Its origin thought to be in the region surrounding the Amazon basin. Introduced to the Western world by Christopher Columbus after his fourth voyage to the New World in 1502, chocolate is now enjoyed worldwide. Researchers estimate that the typical American consumes over 10 pounds of chocolate annually, with those living on the West Coast eating the most. Wouldn't it be great if only chocolate were considered healthy? In fact, chocolate is a great source of myriad substances that scientists think might impart important health benefits. For example, it contains a compound called flavanols that appear to play a variety of bodily roles, including those related to their potent antioxidant anti-inflammatory actions. Many large-scale human studies have documented a statistical correlation between flavanol intake and risk of cardiovascular disease. An animal study suggests that this relationship may be due to the physiological effects that flavanols have on chronic inflammation and blood vessel health and circulating lipid levels. And then it went on to talk about how they gave 50 grams, that's 2 ounces, of a dark chocolate. And then they found out that they gave white chocolate that had zero cocoa. And then they took a look at their blood and blood pressure and found that the dark chocolate was very good for a person. So, once again, I think this is the 53rd study I've reported on. When you have dark organic chocolate, 1 to 2 ounces a day, without any dairy in it and without the processed sugars, you're doing yourself a lot of good. So that's good news. Now for our issue of the day. And this comes from Dr. Bruce Levine from Alternet. Now, as we all know, it's very common in the United States today to be diagnosed or accept that we have depression. Well, this is a warning for people satisfied with their standard depression treatments. Debunking this about them may be troubling. However, for this audience, critical thinking depression sufferers who have not been helped by antidepressants and psychotherapy or standard treatment, there's some discovered truths about these treatments that can provide ideas about what may actually work for you. Critical thinkers have difficulty placing faith in any depression treatment because science tells them that these treatments often work no better than placebos or nothing at all. And if one lacks faith in a depression treatment, it's not likely to be effective. In fact, it is belief and faith. You heard me right. Belief and faith. Or what scientists call expectations. And the placebo effect that mostly are responsible for any depressive treatment working. Critical thinkers can find a way out of depression when their critical thinking about depression treatments is validated and respected, and they are challenged to think more critically about their critical thinking. For example, last year I had a group of people who only could get into this health support group if they had been diagnosed with clinical depression, whether it was bipolar or any other depression, and they were on different meds. And this was supervised by a board-certified neurologist and a professor of neurology and qualified in psychiatry. And there was no protocol given except to examine what is depression. At the end of the day, when we were growing up and we became adults, what caused us to feel good or bad, helpful or helpless, empowered or disempowered, and then what were we conditioned to do when someone insulted us, or someone disempowered us, or someone disrespected us, or we were looked over, or we weren't selected for something, or we were rejected. How were we conditioned to respond to that? And then I had them each write their story. And without exception, this was a big group, over 200 people, the response was that historically, when they were growing up, when they were not given what they felt was nurturing love from their parents, they felt angry, and more often than not, that anger was turned inward and became a form of silent depression. As adults, when they're getting their way and they're happy and their life is under their control, they rarely suffer from any form of depressive event until they start going through menopause. Then two things happen during menopause to most women. One, they begin to gain weight, and they began to have mood swings, and they began to also, from the mood swings and the weight gain, they also start to find their blood pressure rises, they have night sweats, they have hot flashes, the hair starts to fall out, there's a thinning of the eyebrows, they begin fatigue very easily, their libido's gone, and then they get depressed about what they no longer have, what they no longer are. When I suggested to those people in the study who were going through menopause, perimenopause or menopause or postmenopause, how lifestyle could correct that, and did, then they reported on all their indices, no more depression. Now, mind you, these were people who had been diagnosed as clinical depression that would have to be on antidepressant medication the rest of their lives. Every single one of them were off their meds. I didn't tell them to go off. They no longer were depressed. So the question is, they didn't have depression from any biochemical factor. They had to have the belief that they were dealing with a life issue. So how do we deal with life issues in a responsible way? How do we deal with just the day-to-day problems that occur to all of us without then allowing someone to tell us, losing your job, feeling bad, that's clinical depression. Oh, out of a relationship, not clinical depression. You got to take these meds, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, Celexa. Who says? There was a scientist named Kirsch and a group of other scientists in the University of Connecticut. They took a look at 47 separate studies in the peer-reviewed literature. All of them were sponsored by a drug company that made an antidepressant, including the ones I just mentioned, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, and Prozac. Those studies had not been published, but all had been submitted to the FDA, and so under a Freedom of Information Act to gain access to all the data, he discovered that the majority of the trials, the antidepressants failed to outperform sugar pills or placebos. Quote, all antidepressants, Kirsch reported in 2010, including the well-known SSRIs, meaning selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, had no clinical significant benefit over a placebo. And while in aggregate, antidepressants and placebos are about the same, keep in mind that a sugar pill is not going to hurt you or cause you to want to commit suicide or go ballistic or go postal. These antidepressants. So why are so many doctors unaware of the lack of superiority of antidepressants as compared to placebos? The answer became clear when researcher and physician Eric Turner, currently at the Department of Psychiatry and the Center for Ethics and Healthcare at Oregon Health and Science University, discovered that antidepressant studies with favorable outcomes were far more likely to be published than those with unfavorable outcomes. And analyzing published and unpublished antidepressant studies registered with the FDA, Turner found that, quote, 37 of 38 studies having positive results were published. However, studies viewed by the FDA as having negative or questionable results were not published. So here's what it means. When you hear an ad on television that an antidepressant works, nonsense. Works against what? Against having a rabbi, a priest, a friend, a holistic humanistic psychologist, behavioralist, psychotherapist talk with you about how better to deal with the issue that you're facing in a more responsible, mature way? Than a what? A drug or a sugar pill? You're being totally misguided. So just remember, there's a lot of myths about antidepressants. And also, if the first antidepressant fails, they'll give you another. So, don't buy what they say on all this. And also, they are in it for the money, and they bought the scientist. And they'll say, well, there's no treatment works for depression. Not so. All the people in our study got changing their attitude. And with their attitude change and perceptions change, their reality change, no longer do they feel that there was need to feel depressed, to act depressed. And then also helping them to detoxify and rebalance their hormones made a tremendous difference. I'm Gary Knoll. Those are issues. Your turn. Talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. The rest of the program, we're turning over to your insights and what you'd like to share with us. One last thing before we go there. This is from Randy Ananda from Food Freedom News. He says, Monsanto's Food and Drug Administration, isn't that interesting? Monsanto's Food and Drug Administration, not the U.S. Public Food and Drug Administration, but Monsanto's Food and Drug Administration can't close down small dairies and private food clubs fast enough, bursting on the scene with guns drawn as if to the criminalized right to contract with natural foods we've seen for millennia deserves SWAT attention. Now Obama has the Department of Justice going after small farmers under the post-9/11 Bank Secrecy Act, which makes it a crime to deposit less than $10,000 when you earn more than $10,000. Quote, the level we deposited was what it was, and it was about the same every week, said Randy Sowers. Told the Frederick News, the Sowers own and run South Mountain Creamery in Middletown, Maryland. Admittedly, you know, they earned just over $10,000 and they filled out all the paperwork and did everything correct, but they didn't deposit more than $10,000. So they went in and had the feds confiscate their entire bank account, $70,000. And then the feds realized that they had committed no crime, so they dropped any further investigation, but kept 63,000 of the 70,000 they confiscated. You think that's the exception? No, a similar action was taken against Taylor's produce stand last year. The federal government seized $90,000, dropped all charges, and kept 45,000 of their money. Well, how many small farmers in the United States who work on very thin margins could accept this type of abuse? And where is it that the government, the federal government, under our president, Obama, and Justice Department, Eric Holder, could find that there's nothing to charge someone with, nothing to prosecute them, confiscate their bank account, and then keep 80 to 90% of what was in the bank account as if somehow they're entitled to it? Where is the outcry? And when I say we are a fascist country, this is just but one example. I have 10,000 more examples for those who are interested. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. You know I can be found.
sit home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad, something I might have said. Please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love. Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't stop thinking of me. Don't make me feel this way.
Oh, I like
come
yours.
On over here and love me.
This is Jackie Wilson.
Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. The rest of the program is for you and your calls, 888-874-4888. And by the way, please take advantage if you need to. If you're not near a land-based station or near an internet, you can just pick up a phone and call and listen to this program whenever you choose. That number is 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066. And I want to thank those individuals who called in and volunteered to attend the different award ceremony, the Houston International Film Fest in Houston, Texas, where we the Knocking on the Devil's Door won the gold Remy Award. That was the highest of the whole festival out of some 4,200 films. And in the documentary division, and also the Honolulu International Film Festival. We had someone from our audience who lives in Honolulu attend that and picked up a award there. And then the other night, I couldn't get there because I'm on the road filming at the Daytona Beach Film Festival for premiering American Veterans. So I want to thank all those people. And any time there is a film festival, if I can't go, I'll always announce it. So if you'd like to go. And this year alone, we've had people in Los Angeles and Sedona and other places go. And in every case, we've won an award. Next up, I believe, is Toronto, and we have two films in competition there. And I'll give you the particulars in case you live in that area and would like to attend. Let's say hello to... Is it Henry from Queens?
Yes, hello, good evening, Mr. Null. I remember a while back you were fighting against some law in California where they wanted to make it easier just to institutionalize people in mental health institutions for their own good, and I remember you were fighting against that, and I want to know what happened with that issue. And also I heard about these laws like called Kendra's Law where they want to force grown people to take psychiatric drugs so they wouldn't endanger other people. What is your stat? What would you say about that?
Well, they're just beginning. We have not won on any of those issues. The last time we had a major victory was in Florida. And we can thank the activists in Florida, parents mainly, and the Citizens Commission Against Human Rights, who worked all together. They used my film, The Drugging of Our Children, and a five-hour audio segment and an article to attach that went to every member of the Florida legislature, and it laid out this question. Who best to determine the mental health of a child, the parents or the state? And should we have mandatory screening of children in this state? And if so, by what criteria? And if a child is found to have one of the symptoms that someone artificially and subjectively says represents mental illness, then what is the treatment? Well, the treatment would be drug treatment, electroconvulsive therapy treatment, and restraint treatment in a psychiatric institution. And we said, we're becoming a police state. And we won. But that was only one example. We didn't at that time, that Alec is behind all this. And the utterly contemptible corporations that are members of Alec, all of them are contemptible, and we should boycott all of them. But now we know that our state legislators are heavily influenced by meeting in private and secret, doing deals to have private institutions corporations write laws and bills that they go in and act as if they're their own, but you always know they're not their own, because the moment you sit across from one of these people and you challenge them and you have your facts, they're clueless. So we have to be diligent. Here's what I would say. Say no to teen screen. Don't allow your teenager to ever be screened for any mental test at all. And no adult should be screened either. Thank you. Anson from New York, your turn. Hi, Anson. You're up.
Yes, I have a question about, you mentioned about watercress, but I also want to find out about what other vegetables are also potent, because I don't really have the opportunity to shop at an organic health food store that's nearby to me.
Okay, so, I'm going to answer, but you got to hang up because you got noise in the background. You can go to a farmer's market and you can find probably 70 to 80 different vegetables, A, that are inexpensive, that are locally grown, that are organic, and therefore are not raised in one part of America or outside the United States and shipped in, meaning on every level there are reason to buy them, or a food co-op. From collard greens, those are right up there with watercress, and Swiss chard and red Swiss chard, and then red mustard, that is also great, mustard leaf. These are also capable of having the same biochemical and phenolic compounds that can help you. All right? And let's say hello to Robert from the Bronx. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, hi, Gary. I'd like to know if you are familiar with this Italian doctor, Simoncini, and his theories regarding fungus and cancer, where he believes that cancer, there's a link between fungus, mainly Candida albicans, and cancer, and he treats the cancer in patients with sodium bicarbonate.
I have looked at the information. I have written him for specifics. Beyond that information, I've received no correspondence, at least to date, in return, and I'm not impressed with the information that I have. I think it's extremely limited, not discredited, but extremely limited, and only representing one small piece of this puzzle, but is not the answer.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Paul from New Jersey. Paul, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Regarding the vaccinations you were talking about earlier, for baby boomers who had been vaccinated heavily back in the 60s, is the damage done, or is there anything you can do to reverse that at this time? I myself had suffered from chronic fatigue, and I just wondered if they're interrelated.
We now know that in the early 50s, and up through about 1963, there were a number of vaccines that were given that were contaminated with the SV40 virus, the simian virus 40. We know that that virus can alter our immune system, and one of the things it can do, aside from creating rare types of cancer, which they knew at that time, because the founder of that particular vaccine was Dr. Hillman, and Dr. Hillman invented more vaccines than any other scientist in American history, about 16 different vaccines, including the hepatitis vaccine. And he knew early on that they had a very unusual virus that was in all of the vaccines. And because they couldn't recall all these vaccines and they couldn't change them, they simply decided to cover it up. Now, how do we know that? Because just before his death, he asked someone that he knew, for reasons we do not know, to be filmed. And he was filmed, and he actually said this on the film. I have that segment of him saying this and laughing about it, about how he even told Sabin, who his company manufactured the vaccine, that they had injected that vaccine into these hamsters, and they all developed cancer. So what were they to do? Well, don't do anything. It'll panic the public. And so he talked about all of the vaccines were contaminated. All of them. No exception. Every single vaccine made ever in history is contaminated. There is no such thing as a pure vaccine. Now, you can watch that segment in the film Vaccine Nation, where he admits this. He didn't say the vaccines were not effective. Because remember, there's two segments to a vaccine. Are they safe and are they effective? Well, he sure did put the nail into that they are not safe. It was only years later when our generation, through a Freedom of Information Act, found out that we have been lied to and used as human guinea pigs. One of the conditions was chronic fatigue syndrome. So yes, that did make a difference. Now to the larger issue. What can we do if 10, 20, 30, 40 years later you find out that the things you've been suffering from were due to vaccines or ingredients in that instead of vaccines? There's a lot you can do. First, you can do a very deep cell detoxification. This is not just a colon cleanse. This is where you're actually going into the cells to kill pathogens that have taken up a status. There's a stasis between the virus or bacteria, the microorganism, and our cell. And that's why when people say, oh, I got over my cold or I got over my flu, you may have gotten over it, but did you kill all the microorganisms? Are they there at a low dosage? So when you get stressed again or polluted again or tired again, they're going to remanifest. And so there are ways of going about doing real comprehensive detoxes, and that includes ozone and chelation and certain homeopathic zeolites that can help kill these off once and for all and then reestablish well-being. Okay? All the best to you. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have a wonderful question from someone, and I think that your whole audience will benefit from this because I know I experienced this myself early on when I started my own detoxification. It comes from Alessandra from Florida, and she says that, Gary, she is a single mom who's disabled. She says, I'm not stupid, but I somehow end up always doing the wrong things. And I end up getting sick. So even though I might know something, how is it that I'm not actually doing what I know I should be doing? I mean, her physicians actually are thinking she's some kind of hypochondriac. But her question is, why is it that we may know something, but we still end up doing the wrong thing?
All right. This is very common. We have a lot of people who shouldn't smoke, who do, who shouldn't do drugs, who do, shouldn't drink, who do, are in the wrong relationships and stay in them, doing the wrong work and stay in, live in the wrong locations and stay where they're living. In fact, I would say probably 95% of everything a person does after college is not in ideal alignment with their authentic self, and that's one of the reasons there's always this sense of emptiness when they slow down long enough to actually feel life. Have you ever heard of Eric Hoffer?
Yes.
Great philosopher and psychoanalyst of the 1950s and 60s. And he said, it is thus with most of us, we are what other people say we are. We know ourselves chiefly by hearsay. So think of what a person knows about themselves. How do people know themselves? By the feedback other people give them. Which is one of the reasons that I have said time and again, never believe that you're famous or a celebrity or powerful. Never do that. Always remember you're just a human being. And act like one, treat yourself like one, with dignity and respect, but never anything that makes you seem better than others. Now look at all the people in power, from the President of the United States, all of them, senators, House members, governors, mayors, everybody seeking power, the head of a union, they're all corrupt at varying levels. And the consequences manifest at varying levels. The corruption sometimes is that they refuse to acknowledge the people in their own lives until it's too late, where they made everything else more important, holding on to power, manifesting power, soliciting more power than they did the quality of the relationship they had With other persons, it's more pernicious. They abuse the power and public trust to solidify their importance, and because at deep-seated within every successful person is an insecurity that they're a fraud. I've counseled over 70,000 people, but I've counseled thousands of famous people, some of the wealthiest people on the planet, members of the royal family, celebrities you wouldn't imagine I've counseled. Without exception, they're all insecure at some level. And that insecurity is generally hidden and then manifest. It was Jean-Paul Sartre who said, the great French philosopher and social essayist, he said, we only become what we are by the radical and deep-seated refusal of that which others have made us. And once again, what Sartre had and what Hoffer had in common was, rarely do we look in a mirror and see the complete, authentic self. Instead, we see through the lens of mother, fathers, priests, rabbis, imams, through best friends, through peer pressure, through those who acknowledge us, co-workers, we see ourselves through their eyes. And therefore, we're conditioned to believe, honor that. So more important in our life is doing the right thing. And so we do the right thing, but the right thing is already told to us by someone else. What if it's not the right thing for us? If it were, wouldn't we have stopped wars like the Vietnam War or the war in Grenada or the war in Iraq or Afghanistan or all the others in Cambodia or Laos or Vietnam? We would have stopped those. We wouldn't have had to concern ourselves about the erosion of our rights and civil liberties. We wouldn't be nation building. We would not be engaged in regime change. Right now we're in a perfect storm. We do not have a sustainable society at all, on any level. I don't care where you go with this. Intellectually, you will find there is no legitimacy. We are environmentally in the grip of waiting for catastrophic events or environmental episodes to occur, whether it's a big earthquake on the West Coast or a solar storm in the next 12 months or flooding or drought. We're doing zero about it, nothing at all. We're in complete denial or blaming others. We're economically incapable of paying our debt and of resolving our unemployment or low employment, and we're equally so in the rest of the world, such as in the 27 European nations. So there's no happy outcome. We're in denial of the true nature of what has to be done. And then we're in denial of our health. We have never been sicker. Every day, people get up who otherwise in some part of their life can make a reasonable choice and choose unreasonable choices. These are not stupid people. At a certain point, you've got to get up the ghost that every decision that someone makes is a bad decision is because they're too dim, too lazy intellectually to make a good choice. Because if you sit with any of the people that I sit with who are sick, they all were aware that there was a bad choice they were making, but they felt they had no other choice because it was compulsive and they were hiding. And when you're going to hide, you'll hide under any rock, even if the rock you hide under has a scorpion and a rattlesnake hiding underneath there with you. And you learn to coexist with the negative, with the toxic, with the fatalistic, with the blamers, the complainers, the victims. And then you become, through epigenetic, a part of that mindset, a part of that dynamic. And then one day you wake up and you don't know who you are. All you know is you're afraid, you feel paralyzed, and then in comes a National Defense Appropriation Act, or in comes more FEMA camps, or in comes they want to put a black box in every car so they can monitor your results, turn your car engine off, and record all your conversations. Or they monitor everything, knowing full well that they're suffering no ill effects from their tyrannical power because you are not suffering as a human being your authentic power. You have abrogated that. And when a person is coming from fear and insecurity by not living an authentic life with authentic ideals of their own choosing instead of living superficially and by fiat through other people, then they know they got you. And that's why during the Vietnam War, the women's rights, the civil rights, all the major movements in the last 200 years, less than 1% of the American population were engaged. 1%, 99% were hiding under rocks and watching from some safe place as the fight went on. That is so today. And hence, it does not surprise me that someone wakes up one day and doesn't understand that our day-to-day lives rearrange itself around our consciousness. Nothing changes within your control until you will it, until you self-actualize it. But you have to know who you are to have self-actualization. Otherwise, you're self-actualizing someone else's rules, someone else's ideas. Look at the rapturous. Look at the born-again Christians. Look at those people who believe that we are at the end of times. Nonsense. We're not at the end of time. There is no end of time. There's just another day when our own mortality becomes ever more present. And hence all we do is run every day as fast as we can away from the emptiness of our own being. Instead, we should move and live with the flow of our life. Look for the positive lessons in everything you do, including your fear. Once you understand the fear is what's motivated you, controlled you, you've lived by it, then you no longer are allowing it to possess you. Then you can think as an individual, and you can stop clinging to everything. You can relocate your repressed energy, and you can focus on what you lack and what you need. Hence, all healthy choices on every level. Physical, mental, intellectual, spiritual. You become the activist within your own life, and you become the social activist. Hope that answers the question.
Very well.
Thank you, Luann Panessi. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank all of you for listening to our program. I look forward to sharing more on our next.